Charms whenever I want you, all I have to do is dream, 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 dream.
Greetings, programs, and welcome to another episode of Quarks and Recreation. I'm your co-host, Doug.
I'm your other co-host, Brandon.
And today we're covering the science of dreams. We'll be talking about dreams and not just what happens when you fall asleep, but some neuroscience stuff, your brain, how it all fits together. And to help us do that, I have a special guest here today, and her name is Cheryl. You want to tell the audience a little bit about your psychological bona fides?
Okay. I was originally a math professor and for many, many years, and then I went back to school at Pepperdine University and took a master's in clinical psychology. Then I did my internship, which is 3,000 hours. And then there's a series of exams. There's a written exam, which is about a four-hour test, multiple choice, and very difficult. And then after that, the years in which I took my exams, it was an oral exam, which they've since done away with. But the oral exam was pretty interesting experience. Mm-hmm. They had sitting around a table, small table, and there were two state examiners on one side, and the person taking the test is on the other side. And you're not allowed to bring anything into the exam with you, not a purse, nothing, just your keys from your car, which you put on, you know, wherever, some other chair in the room.
In case you were going to use your keys to cheat.
But you can't have a phone, you come in with nothing, not a pencil, just yourself. And they have a recorder, and they give you a little vignette, so you have 7 minutes to read this thing and then get, you know, think about it and take some notes, and then they start firing questions at you. So that's what that experience was like.
And now what do you do with your psych degree?
Now I have a private practice. I did an internship, mostly on a Marine base, which was very interesting. I got to see everybody and from all over the world because they travel and get married, and it's all lots of diversity. And now I have a private practice in Laguna Hills, and I work in a psychiatrist's office.
So you do what people typically think of when they think of a therapist, that people come to you, they talk about their issues, and you try and work through them.
Yes. And my license is marriage and family therapy.
So
there are many different kinds of licenses. You could be a licensed clinical social worker or a PhD. If you took that test, then you'd be a psychologist.
And you're not a research psychologist either. You're not in that kind of field where you take like a thousand test subjects and you give them a questionnaire or you give them some puzzle to do and you measure them, things like
that. That's a completely different thing. I've been trained clinically. So people come in and they talk about their problems and we analyze and discuss and look at things from different points of view.
And dreams are a part of that, right?
Dreams are a part of that. People talk about their dreams all the time.
Do you not hypnotize people?
No, I don't, actually. But you can learn that. That's a separate set of training that you can do, and some people do. Some therapists, there's lots of different tricks in the bag, you know, the different techniques. And some people, I have friends who do EMDR, which is a rapid eye movement thing, and they are fully trained. It takes a long time to do that. And what that is they, the basic of that is if you're talking about certain issues, they will start tapping on pressure points and, you know, like just doing this sort of thing on the knee.
While they're conscious?
While they're conscious and while they're talking, and it helps. I'm not trained in it, so I can't really speak to that, but it is highly successful.
Interesting. So, but you said it was tied to REM. We should probably talk about what that is, since that's kind of a cornerstone of dreams are.
No, it's not tied to REM.
Oh, it's not.
It has to do with your eye movement, not
Not REM sleep.
Not REM sleep.
Okay, well, REM sleep, we should talk about that a little bit. I was going to save that for later, but REM sleep, it's the REM stands for rapid eye movement. Rapid eye movement is a phase, and if you ever watch someone sleeping, you'll notice they'll get to a point where, like, their eyelids, you can see their eyes.
I've seen, like, movies where they're, like, back and forth.
Yeah, everybody does it. When you sleep, you actually sleep on a cycle that your brain, even though it is, in theory, unconscious and working its way through things and not... You would look at a sleeping person and think there's nothing going on there. But in fact, there's like a lighter stage of sleep and you get deeper and deeper and you hit REM sleep where your eyeballs flip back and forth. And that's generally when scientists think that's when your dreams happen. And then you'll go back. You'll go back up through the sleep cycle to a lighter stage. And this will happen on the order of, I think, what, every 90 minutes, you'll go through these cycles every night. So when people talk about REM, that is what they're talking about. It's a side effect of dreaming, or what's the process is going on in your head that your eyeballs just
now,
jump around.
I've had this is a little off. Well, not really, but it's about dreams.
Okay.
I've had people say that, well, just kids that say dreams are like 2 seconds long. Is that true, or is it longer, or do they not really know?
Scientists would have to assume that dreaming is going on while REM sleep is going on, and that lasts a lot longer than 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Dreams to the, and we've all experienced dreams. When you're in the dream, your sense of time passing is entirely skewed. You don't necessarily measure time the same way you do when you're awake, right? Because it's a dream, because mm-hmm. it's by its definition, it's somewhat disorienting. So I've had, I think we've all had this. There's sometimes when, like, you go to sleep and it feels like you've been asleep forever, and you wake up and it's only 10 minutes later.
Yeah.
Or you have the opposite, where you sleep an entire night and it feels like it went by in the blink of an eye, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how long does a dream last?
Undecisive.
Well,
it varies.
It would be, in theory, no longer than the REM, that individual REM phase lasts. So, but that's how long your brain is processing the dream. That's different from how long you're experiencing it.
You dream every night.
Right.
We just don't remember them.
No, by and large, you don't remember them. And that kind of goes hand in hand with the process of memory. And I thought it would be good to kind of start the podcast by talking about the hardware inside your skull, like, what your brain is, how it works, before we move on to the software, which is your thoughts and both your conscious and subconscious thoughts that make up what your dreams are actually about. Have you ever seen a brain outside of a skull, like what they look like?
They look like kind of like two-fist.
They're kind of wrinkly.
There's two lobes.
Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. So the frontal lobe of your brain is different from the frontal lobe of any other mammal in that it's much, much larger. And that frontal cortex is where all of your high-level functioning and thinking take place, in this part of your brain. As you work your way back, say where your temples are, if we were to push in, that area of your brain is more involved with processing sensory information. So the signals you get from your eyeballs and your ears, that all goes on there. A lot of language processing takes place kind of on the sides of your brain. And as you work your way all the way to the back, you get to what is often referred to as the lizard brain. And that is where all of the parts that are automatic reside. So, for example, regulating your hormones, your heartbeat, your breathing, the fact that the way your digestive system squishes and moves food through, that all goes on without you having to think about it. And that's handled by this base part of your brain. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to dreams, those dreams are basically types of thoughts. Have you ever seen a nerve cell before?
A nerve cell? No.
Okay. Do you have any idea how a nerve cell works? now you do, because we talked about it off air.
A little bit.
Okay, so let me put it real simple. So your nerve cell has all the same bits and pieces that your other cells do, right? It's got a nucleus, it's got mitochondria and ribosomes, all the things you hear about in biology class.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also got a couple of special parts. It's got what are called axons and dendrites. The axon is a long, spindly, spider web looking structure, and then the dendrite is like a little bulb sort of at the end. And each nerve cell connects to every other nerve cell through these structures, like a big web. But at the end of these structures, these dendrites, there's actually a gap. They don't quite touch all the way, but they're very, very close. Across that gap, your nerve cell will squirt various types of what are called neurotransmitters. So serotonin is one, dopamine is another. There are actually a lot more, but those are kind of two of the most important ones for what we're going to be talking about today. And as it squirts it across, the other side catches it. And it has a various receptors that are engineered to react to just that one molecule. So if I gave you a hockey stick in one hand and a tennis ball racket in another hand, if I threw a hockey puck at you, you'd know which one to use, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So the same way, on the receiving end of this neurotransmitter dump, there is the receptor is geared towards specifically that one. And when it hits, it sets off another squirt of that potential neurotransmitter on the other side to some other nerve cell. So once this goes across the synapse, which is the gap that we talked about, it keeps happening all over the place. And that series of different neurotransmitter releases is how thoughts are actually sent around your brain. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So when it comes to memories, and memory is really important here because I think we were talking a little bit about why you can't always remember your dreams. So your memory is is one set of these nerve cell firings, right? This whatever this pattern is, your thought or your experience can be encoded in your brain as this cascade of nerve responses. Your brain has both short-term and long-term memory. So, for example, if I told you somebody's address, you could probably remember that for a little while and then you forget it, right? Okay. But if it was a place that you ended up going to all the time, say it was
your house,
a relative's house, your best friend's house, eventually you don't have to think about it anymore and it gets stored in your long-term memory. You build up these short-term memories all throughout the day, right? It's, what did I just have for breakfast?
Yeah.
Who did I talk to during lunch? What did they say? If these things aren't important, your brain doesn't hold on to them and they get lost.
If you were to hold on to all of that, what would happen?
Well, I mean, there are some people who have what is called a photographic memory, but it's very rare. But there are people who claim that they can remember everything that ever happened to them throughout their lives. So it's not like your head would explode from from too much knowledge. But it's very, very rare. And usually people who claim to have photographic memories have to be, you'd have to really test them to make sure that they're not basically full of it. And that's the difference. There are people with very, very good memories. And then this is a whole other separate thing, right? And it's possible for people who have photographic memories that the encoding process where your brain takes a short-term memory and turns it into a long-term memory by basically transcribing that set of nerve impulses, the process that goes on inside the memory of a photographic memory person would be very different from you or me, or even just a person who's pretty good at remembering a lot of stuff, right?
Like, I can, remember this and that, but, not like every little thing.
Right. That their brain would probably be set up, they would have some genetically different thing about their brain that allows them to do that. It's not something you could train yourself to do.
So, like, somebody with that, like, you just picked up a cup of soda, so they would remember that in 4 hours from now.
They'd remember it 4 years from now. That's what that... you can't call it a disorder, but, I mean, if you have that gift, that's what it's like. But there are very few people who truly have it. But there are certainly a large number of people who have very, very good memories. But that process is, like I said, it's a transcription process. One part of your brain has this set of nerve cells and impulses that are all kind of wired together into, like, one... Think of it like a computer file. Like, that's one file, and it gets copied over through this consolidation process at the end of the day to your long-term memory, if it's the kind of memory that you're going to remember. And it could be anything. Whether or not your brain chooses to do that is usually based on how important that memory is to you. Like, and it could be something that, like, important doesn't necessarily mean that, man, it's going to be useful to know that. Mm-hmm. Important means, in this context, more about what you were feeling at the time. Because you could give me a factoid, right? You know, like, whatever you do, don't forget this string of 8 numbers. Mm-hmm. Okay, that might be hard to remember because it has no context. Even if you tell me your life will depend on this someday, right?
Yeah.
Whereas there are people, you know, especially when it's something traumatic, you know, something really bad happens to you, there will be minor details about that day. You know, you'll talk to people that were in a horrific car accident, and they'll remember, you know, exactly, you know, what they were wearing that day, what everyone else around them was wearing, or, you know, what smells.
True.
Right. Even though on a normal day, those things would be not important at all. Mm-hmm. But because of the context, your brain will process that into its long-term memory because it was important for your overall, I guess, development or character. It's now part of you, that particular incident. Make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. We should talk a little bit about where this ties into dreams. Because you said, you know, we were talking, like I said, why don't you remember your dreams? Your dreams are not being processed in the parts of your brain that normally process higher average everyday thought of walking around and observing things and talking to people. It's happening in other parts of your brains, and therefore, whether or not it gets in, it's not necessarily going through the normal encoding process to work its way into your long-term memory, unless it's particularly memorable or there's something that stands out about that dream.
Well,
right?
But also it's part of your unconscious, and sometimes we're not ready to be aware of what's in our unconscious because it is either too scary or too hard to handle. You're not ready to process it yet. You're not aware of the meaning of it yet. And so your brain doesn't let you remember those things.
Yeah.
Although you can train yourself to remember some brain activities. You know,
we know what a dream is, but what's the difference between a dream, like being knocked out, and a coma?
Well, if you're in a coma, you're not going to be experiencing, you may or may not dream. Dreams, remember, are on this sleep cycle.
Mm-hmm.
When you're in a coma, you're not necessarily going through that process as you normally would. In fact, depending on how deep the coma is, you may not have a whole lot going on at all. A dream is still, it's still using a lot of your higher level brain function, right? You're still experiencing things that you see visually or hear, or having any other kinds of sensations, and you're thinking about them, right? Sometimes in dreams you can certainly make decisions, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to run away from that thing, or, you know, here's what I'm going to say next. All of those kinds of high level thoughts may not necessarily be happening with someone who's knocked unconscious or comatose, right? That cycle could be disrupted.
And we can do things in dreams that we can't necessarily really do. For example, fly.
Yeah,
most people have had the flying dream.
Right.
You know, or breathing underwater, which we can't do.
And in your dream, sometimes
it feels real.
And often it doesn't even create any dissonance, right? Like, you're flying, and at no point do you necessarily, oh my God, this, I mean, if you were to fly while you were awake, it would be the most amazing thing, and you would be spending half of the time going, how is this happening? This shouldn't be happening. But in a dream, you can often accept these unreal things as just part of the reality, as if it was no big deal.
Or, like, doesn't even matter. Like,
right, you don't, your brain isn't questioning it. It's not, because there is a part of your brain that does question weird things, right? When you see something that is, you know, like it shouldn't happen. You know, imagine going back to being a really young kid and seeing, a blimp for the first time. Like, a balloon flies away. That's a good one. A helium balloon flies away. Well, that should rock your world as a little kid because everything else you've ever dropped in your life fell to the ground.
Yeah.
Right? And you don't have a way to process that. So that's going to create, it could create stress, it could create curiosity, but you're going to have a response to it. in a dream, you may not have that response at all. And that's the interesting part, is you're not even bothering to think, hey, that's weird. You just accept it. And dreams are often very disjointed, too. Some people remember, have very vivid dreams that at least kind of hang together from beginning to end as to what happened. I personally know my dreams tend to be fairly disjointed. I don't remember them very well at all.
I remember a lot of mine, and it's crazy how much.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. I assume those dreams are... Is it because they're repetitive dreams?
Well, there's the braces dreams I talked about earlier.
Okay, so...
There's other things. I just remember a lot of them. And it may not just be memorable, but some of them are kind of cool.
Okay.
Like recently, I think it was like 3 weeks ago, and I probably told you about this. Hmm. I was in a dream, and I remembered a past dream. It was kind
of
cool.
So within the dream, you were able to access the memory of an earlier dream.
Because you were probably working through some experience or something that you were afraid of. Sometimes a dream is a wish fulfillment. I'd like to be able to do this. I want to fly away, and we fly away, or go way up high if we have a fear of heights, but in the dream we don't. Or it could be something to do with school, your life, or, depends what is symbolized by the dream. There's two parts of the dream. There is the manifest dream, which is what happens in the dream. And then there's the latent part, which is what it means to you. So the first part of analyzing a dream is saying to the person, okay, tell me what happened. And then the second part is, well, how did you feel in the dream? What did that mean to you? And then sometimes we look at a dream dictionary to look up what the symbol would be of certain things.
Well, that's certainly a very Freudian analysis, right? That dream, like objects, certain things in dreams. Like if you see a fish in your dream, that usually means this, right?
I think that would be more Jung. He believed in the symbolism of it. Freud, at the beginning, always thought it was a wish fulfillment.
Do you know who Freud is, what we're talking about?
Sigmund Freud.
Okay.
One of the greatest,
He's basically the
psychiatrist.
He was
a neurologist, actually.
They would call him the father of psychology. I mean, before that, when if you were having a problem... like a psychological problem, they would, drill holes in your head to let the demons out. Like it was that kind of, or they'd leech you, or they'd bloodlet you, or they'd do things like that. And Freud is revolutionary because he's one of the first guys to sort of say, well, let's actually just sit down and talk to people and see what they're working through. And he was sort of the first to recognize that your brain, or rather your thought process, has a conscious and a subconscious level.
Unconscious.
Well, both, right?
Well, the unconscious is really what he talked about. Things that were not known to you.
And it's kind of interesting.
That were in there.
And if you think about it, think of the computer that we're recording this on. The computer has all of the instructions it needs to run the computer. Your brain doesn't, right? All of this stuff that we're talking about, like, why am I feeling this way? Or why, how does this happen? We're still learning about how our own bodies work because there's no way to access the part of your brain that knows what, think about it, until recently, we didn't know what neurotransmitters were, right? When we talked about serotonin and dopamine and this process going on between nerve cells, the brain that was doing that didn't know it was doing that, right?
Really?
Cavemen didn't know what that was,
yeah.
Right? So there's this disconnect between how our brains actually work and our own knowledge of what's going on inside our own bodies.
And different psychologists interpreted them differently. For example, Freud wrote The Interpretation of Dreams. That was revolutionary at the time. And this is what he thought dreams were, what they were defined as. The first was thoughts in pictures, a process of thinking while asleep. The second was ego alien. They have a life of their own, which appears to be other than our own conscious will. Which led other cultures to believe that dreams were sent by, the
spirit. Visions, not
right.
Just
they were hallucinatory. Dreams. In other words, we believe that the reality of the dream while we're in it. If you're getting chased by a monster, you think you're really getting chased by a monster, even though you're asleep in your bed. The drama of it, the dreams are not random image. They are stage managed into very definite, sometimes recurring themes and plots. Moral standards, they have very different moral standards in our waking personality. Sometimes you'll do things like all kinds of different things.
Well, you'll kill someone
that you would not, that's right, they do or steal something that you would really not do. And that it was an association of ideas. In dreaming, we have access to infant or other memories or experiences we would find very difficult to recall while awake. And that's why psychologists want to work with dreams sometimes, because it leads us to know what's in the unconscious, what was there, because frequently people come in with issues and problems that they want to talk about in therapy that happened before they could even speak. So there's no way for them to verbalize, and that's how we get a lot of these techniques like sand tray and drawing pictures and things, because what's coming out is what's in that unconscious mind. And we try to make the unconscious conscious.
The goal is, if you can take this thing deep in someone's unconscious and bring it to light in front of them, so now they can actually see it or deal with it, you know, they can be aware of it, as opposed to, you know, wondering why they're having all of these impulses or feelings that they can't control or don't, or that are unwanted or maladaptive. And making them aware of it, you know, or the underlying cause, allows them to deal with that in a more direct way. That's kind of the goal of Freudian psychology. And modern psychology.
Whereas Jung felt that it was a meaningful experience with spiritual roots. You know, Freud thought everybody was a tabula rasa, came in with a blank slate.
Right, you're born.
Jung didn't think that.
He thought the
unconscious kept coming through from other generations.
Yeah, the theory is called the collective unconscious.
That's right.
So he thought that just because, by virtue of being a member of the human race, that you share, there's certain things that are either that you spiritually, at least he thought, share with other people, but in a more scientific way, the thought would be that this software all comes pre-installed in you as part of it. So for example, if you you were talking about, say, dreams of flying or dreams of taking a test, right? Like, why does everybody keep having these same dreams all the time? And the reason is, according to Jung, because we're all hardwired with a lot of the same fears and societal connections, cultural connections.
Well, we do have some. I mean, all kids are born with a fear of the dark. Absolutely. Yeah. We'll come in with it. If you're falling, there are certain things
that
everybody comes in with.
I don't think that's more something you're hardwired with. I think that's just something a little kid, that's their imagination.
Well, it's going to be because the question is it something that you're born hardwired with it, or is it just this experience is so common that it wouldn't matter anyway, right? Like, of course, everyone's going to be scared of the dark because everyone's going to experience night. But the response to it, the fear response, is interesting, because if it wasn't hardwired in some way, you would think, you know, would everyone be afraid of the dark, right? If half the people might go like, oh, okay, it's dark, you know, whatever, or hey, I like the dark.
Everybody has a good fear of the dark.
Since most everybody, the response is always fear. But if you were a true tabula rasa, you would be making your own decision to some degree about how to respond to it, right?
That's right. And then you just made a good case for Jung, who felt that you should look at the series of dreams in one's life to develop a further insight into the self.
Well, maybe this is a good time to go to our Internet is Dumb segment.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go.
The Internet is Dumb.
All right. So the Internet is Dumb segment, we take a myth and we debunk it. And actually, I have two for this one. One's real quick and one's more interesting. So the first one is this myth you've probably heard because it keeps showing up in movies, which is that you only use 10% of your brain. Have you ever heard that one?
Yeah, I've heard like 5% of your brain. I've heard.
Right. No, that's all nonsense. You use 100% of your brain. Yeah. If you were only using 10% of your brain, you would be
like a vegetable.
You would be a vegetable. Yeah. No, it actually comes from a misquote that I forgot the name of the person who originally said it. But what he said was, we only know what 10% of the brain does. And that was like 100 years ago. So now we know. Now we know a lot more about what different parts of your brain are for. And in fact, you can do what's called MRI imaging.
Mm-hmm.
And they squirt a radioactive substance into your blood. And they will measure you with a machine. And you can actually see parts of your brain light up because they're active. They're using a lot of blood and a lot of energy. And you can see for various types of activities, it could be all over the place. If it's dreaming, it's in certain spots. If it's doing a vocabulary test, it's another spot. If it's drawing a picture or listening to music, it's a different spot. So your entire brain is working all the time in different ways.
And they can do that with emotions, too, because they'll have subjects of an experiment watch a movie, and they'll know which part is lighting up because they've wired them, whether it's a sad part of the movie or a funny part of the movie, and they can map where those emotions are.
Right.
In the brain.
So next time you see, they did that in Limitless, and like Lucy was another one of like, oh, if you could use all 100% of your brain, you could move things with your mind. And like, yeah, no, you're using it all. It's there for a reason. Okay. The other myth is, if you die in a dream, you die in real life.
That one's always kind of been, I've always wondered.
Would you die?
Because, you know, I've had dreams where I've been hurt, but I think my uncle once said that he was in a dream where he was getting chased by Indians.
And that's a very common dream, a chase dream.
Yeah, he gets chased.
Not chased by Indians specifically, just chased
but
in general.
Chased he's by a monster, by an Indian, by whatever.
But chased by Indians, and they threw a spear in and it hit him. And then he remembers, like, a bright light, and then he remembers waking up.
Yeah, he didn't die.
You don't know.
Well, remember, the dreams are so unreal, too, that death, quote unquote, could be completely implausible, right? You're already flying or doing other stuff. You could twist your head off and carry
it.
I mean, you're like a cartoon in a dream, right? You can't really get hurt, and all kinds of crazy things can happen with the laws of physics. But what is true is that you could die from fear. But you'd have to be the kind of person with a weak heart.
Well, it would have to be, your heart would have to stop. But in terms of the chasing, the symbol of that is avoiding something that might be overwhelming, like the responsibility or, you know, expressing how we really feel. You can't escape it. I've had a couple of recurring dreams myself. Some are funny. When I was a kid, I really didn't have much voice. I was afraid to say what I really wanted, and I had this repeating dream, and I must have had it many times, and I still remember it. After all these years, I was chewing bubble gum or some kind of gum.
And your mouth is full.
And my mouth was full, and I couldn't talk, and I was constantly trying to take the gum out like a magician with the scarves, you know? They're taking them all those different color scarves out, and finally, when the gum would be out of my mouth and I went to speak, all of a sudden, I'd be full of gum again.
And believe it or not, I've had that exact same dream.
That's very interesting.
Well, because we're related? Or
yes, because I wouldn't think anybody would have the exact
same night.
No, I don't know about
that. Well, and then I've had another recurring dream more in my adulthood when I was making... I always have this every Thanksgiving when I'm making the turkey, is that everybody has arrived. The table is set. Everybody's waiting for Thanksgiving dinner, and my turkey is still frozen. It hasn't been put up.
It's a preparation dream.
Well, it was the anxiety, and I was probably working through the timeline of how I was going to make this party, and when you know, you have to take a turkey out several days in advance for it to thaw properly in the refrigerator. And you have to set away time to prep it and then to cook it and all of that. And my mind was probably working on that. But I vividly remember those dreams because I would wake up upset, you know, like, whoa, because everybody was expecting me to provide this, you know, fabulous meal. And it took a little effort. So,
like, more with this, if you could die, you know, I still think that it's possible because I can, like, when I was little, like 5, 6, whenever there'd be water in my dream, I would pee and wet my bed. So I feel like what you do in a dream could affect what you do.
Yeah, it can. And like I said, I think you could have a dream that goes beyond a nightmare and becomes what's called a night terror.
Those are different. And a night terror is really a serious problem.
Right. Like, I actually had a nightmare last night, but it was, you know, it's scary, but not the kind of thing where... Night terrors are, you hear about people like thrashing in beds and screaming violently every night, you know, from probably the same recurring thing every time, too.
A night
right?
terror is probably part of PTSD,
post-traumatic stress disorder.
Thank you.
Yeah.
or some sort of abuse, or, you know, something that really happened out of the ordinary.
Right, not our normal fears and anxieties.
Huge anxiety, something very different. Nightmares we have all the time.
Yeah, every so often.
Mm-hmm.
Right, right. And generally, the more nightmares you have and the more severe they are, that tends to indicate that you've got something going on in your life, right? If you're just an average happy-go-lucky person, you just get one every once in a while randomly.
What about sleepwalking?
Oh.
That's interesting.
That's, yeah, and that's not necessarily tied to dreaming either.
It's not.
Like a dream where you're a zombie.
No.
Or...
Nope.
You're sort of semi-conscious because you're able to navigate. You don't fall down the stairs. There are night
eaters.
Walkers that they go out and they eat and they can't figure out why they're gaining weight. It's because every night
they walked out of the refrigerator.
Sometimes they get dressed, they're still really asleep, they get into the car, they drive to an ice cream place, have, you know, gargantuan's amount of ice cream, come back, get into bed, and have no memory of it.
Really?
Talk about memory. They don't remember this. And somebody has to watch them to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, it's like they'll install a camera in their house or something.
That's kind of creepy, in a way, where like you're being possessed or something like that.
Kind of, except you're the one possessing yourself. You just don't know it. But like I said, for the die in the dream, die in real life thing, you could have an experience that's very, very, very scary. And if your health is weak to begin with, like your heart is bad, a scary experience in a dream is probably just as good as a terribly scary experience in real life. But barring that, no, you shouldn't die. Your response is to fear is usually adrenaline, right? Adrenaline will cause your heart to beat, and essentially what will happen is it'll cause you to wake up. That's the side effect.
Which is why when you're having a nightmare, you wake up.
And
everybody says, oh, thank God that wasn't real.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what I say in my braces dreams. Thank God that wasn't real.
Mm-hmm. No, that's exactly it. Are you ready to go on to some of our mail, or do you want to talk about any other topics? Are you good?
Well, yeah.
Sure.
The movie...
Inception?
How'd you know? Is it possible to dream inside of a dream inside of a dream?
You can have dreams. There are such things... that reminds me of another topic. I'll put a pin in that. But yes, you can have a dream within a dream.
Okay.
Now, within a dream, within a dream, within a dream, within a dream, maybe not. And certainly we have no way yet of doing what they do in that movie, which is like tapping into another person's dream and like being inside it or even just watching it like it was a movie, right? We're not there yet with our ability because it's hard to measure.
Because we're only using 10% of our brain.
Well, because we can't see what's going on inside your head. Like, we can measure the electrical activity in your head, but that's not the same as being able to take every single nerve signal from one cell to another and then translating that into an image, right? We don't fully understand that the way, like, say, with a computer, if you could watch all the zeros and ones, we could figure out what was going on. We don't fully understand the language of thought yet, the chemical language, to be able to translate that into an image, let alone put you inside someone else.
Yeah.
I've definitely, I think, had a dream within a dream at least once in my life. It's rare, but it can happen. But
I'm not sure, but just...
But usually what it means is you're just transitioning from one dream into another dream. It's not like you're going deeper, like they sort of talk about.
Well, there are those theorists who believe that each part of the dream is part of you.
Right.
So even if it seems disconnected, it's not. If you were to take the symbol dictionary and look up each part of it, which is how we interpret a dream, you would see that there's a connection there, that you're probably working through something or there's a fear or a wish that's getting fulfilled.
And if Plato were here, he'd ask, you know, how do you know you're not dreaming right now?
That's what I was going to say.
That's a philosophy question.
Yeah.
That's,
but then whatever you're saying right now would mean that I knew that in my subconscious, right?
Well, yeah, exactly. That would mean that this entire conversation is taking place purely in your head. And that somewhere there's some level at which you're actually awake and you're not there right now. Plato was the first, I think, person to kind of kick this idea around. He wrote something called The Allegory of the Cave, which dealt with exactly that. Like, how would you know? If the dream is indistinguishable from waking life, you can't tell the difference. This was also done, more recently, in The Matrix, right? It's like, how do you know you're not just in the Matrix. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, I think it's safe to say we're in the real world.
Yeah.
You know, it's a nice philosophical question to ask, but scientifically, I don't know that it goes anywhere. Okay, I think with that, we're probably good to go on to our viewer. No one's viewing this podcast. It's audio. Our listener mail.
She wrote upon a return to sender. Address unknown. No such number. No such song.
I don't want to read all this mail.
All right, our first question comes from Braden W., and he wants to know, why are some dreams like falling or being naked in public so common?
Because you're scared of doing that.
Well, we all have the same fears.
And they all manifest the same way.
That's right.
So
let me see. Are you interested in the meaning of those?
Sure. While you're looking that up.
Sometimes they're sexual, too.
Well,
you know, Freud...
Freud, he
thought everything had to do with sex.
But, well, one interesting idea is that, you know, all of those ideas assume that your dream does have a meaning. There is some theory that talks about, well, maybe the dreaming is actually just a byproduct. That what, like we talked about, your brain at night starts taking all of your short-term memory files and turning them into long-term memory files. It might be that as a side effect of that process, it causes the rest of your brain to go in hallucination mode, right? That, like, I pull out the file on what you had for lunch today, and you experience being chased by a giant sandwich, right? Not quite that one-to-one, but essentially it doesn't mean anything, and it's just a process that's going on while you're asleep, and that's just how you experience it. But it seems to be that because some of these things are so universal and because they respond to trauma, there is a connection between what you experience and the kind of dreams you have. So you said you were looking up on...
Yeah, I did. Some researchers suggest falling is one of the main themes in dreams. And at the end of this whole big explanation, we have falling represents loss of confidence, threat to usual sources of security, such as relationship, source of money, social image, beliefs, and tension. Sometimes it is a loss of social grace, losing face, moral failure, or falling into temptation, coming down to earth from a too lofty attitude or sexual surrender.
Hmm. That's pretty intense.
Yes,
all right.
Those are the different things that could be. Again, when you talk about the dream you're having, it's not just the content; it's your reaction to it, how you felt about it.
Right. That's why I think some people are advised to do dream journals. So
I had to do that when I was little. Cause
right.
Yeah, like
I had bad dreams.
Yeah, you wake up and you tend to forget that dream. Like I said, it doesn't go through the normal encoding process, so mm-hmm. often your dreams just get lost. And like even a dream that you can remember, like while you're having breakfast, by the time it's lunch, you've forgotten it, even when you went out of your way to try. So if you write it down, you'll at least have the act of writing it down helps carve it into your brain one more time, and then two, you can go back and look.
I once wrote down about a dream where Selena Gomez was jumping on people's heads.
We've all had that dream.
Well, falling also could be like falling in love.
That's
it doesn't
true.
Have to be negative. It could be a positive thing, right. too. And yet, somehow, your brain turns everything into something else.
Like a puzzle.
That's right.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Next question comes from Kaya R., she asks, is there a way to make sure I don't ever have another nightmare?
No.
No, sorry.
There is no way.
I mean, all you can do is, I guess, try to have a positive, remove negative things from your life, right? Because it's...
But even then, I'm sure there's something scary that happens.
Well,
there's always something negative in your life. You can't, I mean, we always try to have a better attitude and a rosy outlook that things are going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
But people always, there's never going to be a time when there's not some issue or something happening that you're not concerned with. And that changes over time. I mean, you're concerned over your braces and probably about school exams and maybe sports and things like that are going on in your life.
Mm-hmm.
When people get a little older into marriage age, they're worrying about dating. Will this person like me? And even then, all through our lives, that's an issue. Will this person like me or not like me? Making friends at school, having a baby.
Enough money.
Right. Elderly people worry about
running out of time,
running out of money. But also, it's not just the running out of their own lifetime. It's what will happen to those
I care about.
And that sort of thing comes out in dreams, too. Sometimes we have such a scary dream that we wake ourselves up screaming. That's happened to almost everybody.
There's just no way to take anxiety out of your life. Now, you can try and reduce it if there's something particular. You try and fix a problem. And you work on it.
Exactly.
You know, if you live in a place...
The band of anxiety and fear and all that is not necessarily unhealthy. Mm-hmm. We have some very healthy fears.
Mm-hmm. Right.
For example, we're not going to go into, let's say, a very, very bad neighborhood all by ourselves in the middle of the night and stand on the corner and wait and see what happens.
Right.
Or we're not going to go for they tell us there's a tsunami coming, most people are not going to go down to the beach to watch. So there's a healthy fear of that.
Right. Fear is a good thing to have. It helps guide your decisions. And it's not all bad. Okay. This is just a question, not a science question, but just one for all of us. Michelle J. wants to know, what is the weirdest dream you ever had? Oh, man, the weirdest one?
The weirdest dream I've ever had.
Gosh, I remember, this is one I remember fairly vividly, and this is a dream I had when I was 6, and I never forgot it, that I was over at my best friend's house, and at some point, this gold thing, like a hexagonal, like, thing, descended from the ceiling on poles, and in the middle of it was this horrifying, like, monstrous mouth, and it was going like, and then I woke up. I don't know why I never forgot it. It was some weird nightmare I had when I was 6, and it just
it was a little frightening that an inanimate object.
Well, it
had
was more
speech.
It wasn't even that. No, it didn't have speech. It was like a biomechanical thing, like something out of a movie,
like
right?
The Maze Runner.
Well, the gold, you know, that image is of something important, something.
I think it was the old school Legend of Zelda cartridges were this gold color. They made them gold. I feel like it was that color. So who the hell knows what that meant? But that's just the first thing that comes to mind because it was vivid and I never forgot it.
I think the weirdest dream I ever had was I was a wolf.
That's cool.
I don't remember everything. I just remember being a wolf and just walking around being a wolf. Kind of like Goat Simulator, but a wolf.
That'll be interesting when you get to reading Game of Thrones. Spoiler alert. Here's another one. I remember, I don't remember the whole dream, but I've had dreams where it's the falling dream, but gravity isn't up down. Like, gravity's, like, all of a sudden we're all falling, like, sideways or diagonal. And I remember kind of using that to, like, bounce and kind of float. So, that was kind of odd, too. So, even if you have the falling dream, physics aren't going to go the way you want.
Well, I've had the flying dream, where I was totally happy. It was such a great experience. I loved it. Because I could escape the bounds, I think, of, you know, just being on the ground. And, I would be flying under and over bridges and, you know, things like that.
I would always be in a desert that I'd be flying.
Here's another interesting thing that I think happens in a lot of people's dreams is that you are in a location that is familiar but is not. So, for example, I've had dreams where I'm at my old high school, but the layout isn't the layout. Like, there's buildings there that in real life aren't really there. But in the dream, I never question it. In my dream, I'm like, yeah, that's my high school, even though the architecture is totally wrong.
Yeah, I've had dreams where, like, my school is really, like a whole city and stuff like that.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a common one. Okay, one last question. Tyler Wise said, one time I had this incredible lucid dream, but I was never able to do it again. In a lucid dream...
Oh, you know that you're in a dream.
Right, and when you know you're in a dream, you're God,
and
right? You can do whatever you want. Yeah, you can, like, now I can fly. I can do whatever I want because I'm aware it's a dream and the rules don't apply and I can make whatever. But I don't know that there's a way to cause them. There are certainly... I was reading an article about, you know, they were trying to see if the brains of people who have a lot of lucid dreams are different than the brains of people who don't. But I don't know that there was any way to, say, take a person who doesn't have a lot of those and make them into a person.
Now that I think about a lucid dream, though, that's probably the weirdest dream I ever had.
Okay.
It was I went to a bunch of theme parks, but I couldn't control it. It was like a time warp. And I go to a bunch of theme parks, and then at the very end, my grandma said hi. I said, I think I'm in a dream. and then I started shooting bubbles out, and then it ended.
Okay. That's fun. Mom, have you ever had a lucid dream?
Can't remember.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
They tend to be rare. I mean, there are some people who claim to have gotten good at it by practicing. Oh, I don't know how you practice.
You go
to sleep every night.
I don't remember the dreams, but I'm sure I know I've had dreams where I said to myself, I know this has to be a dream. So maybe that's...
And then there's that whole other stage, because I'm sure I've had dreams, too, where I am able to recognize that I'm in a dream, but there's still that next step to being able to now... I am God. Like, I can, you know, I can turn the sky purple,
yeah,
and
like,
I can do, you know,
I never
whatever.
Did that.
Like, you may know you're a dream, but it's like watching a movie. You can't control what's going to happen in the movie. You're just watching it, and you know that it's a movie.
Right, but in a true lucid dream, you become the director
like
of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can do whatever. So that's a great question. Anything else we want to cover before we call it a day here on dreams?
I think got a lot in.
All right. Good. First of all, I want to thank you, Cheryl, for sitting in on the podcast with us. It was a lot of fun having you.
My pleasure.
We should tell our audience, if you want to get in touch with us, you can go to facebook.com/quarksandrec. That's our Facebook group. You can tweet us at quarksandrec, or you can write to us at quarksandrec@gmail.com. Like us on iTunes. Rate us highly. Tell all of your friends. We should talk about what our next episode is going to be. We're doing the science of Star Wars, because why the heck not? It's everywhere.
Because everybody loves Jar Jar Binks.
No. we'll talk about some other stuff related to Star Wars that's a lot more fun. So if you got any questions about the science behind Star Wars, and we will be covering all 7 movies, including the new one, shoot us any questions, and we'll be happy to answer them on the show. And until next time, I'm Doug.
I'm Brandon.
And
I'm Cheryl.
And we'll see you later. Bye.
Bye.